Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh joins us for his monthly visit. Doc, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, sir.
Glad to have you with us. And we have a guest this morning. I'll let you introduce her.
Yes, a friend of mine and very much a renowned author, Miss Rosemary Gibson, who's authored the book called The Treatment Trap, and it's a guide to prevent unnecessary medical treatment. She's also senior advisor at the Hastings Center and has authored three other books, including books that have been on medical errors, healthcare reform, and also the future of Medicare. And so I'd like to, Rosemary, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning,
Pleasure
Rosemary.
To be here.
Yeah. And I think today what we're going to try to talk about again is the topic of medical overtreatment. The Institute of Internal Medicine estimates that a third of our medical care is probably unnecessary. There's a variety of factors in that, but definitely a patient needs to educate himself so he doesn't seek unnecessary care. And if it's offered, he doesn't obtain it. And it's can be hard to do, obviously.
All right. You say there are a variety of factors. You've got several things where there is the risk or a history of overuse in the medical field. I don't know, Kevin, you've put the list together. Where should we start? Should we start with that, or should we talk about the factors that lead to overuse of some of these treatments? Because I'm betting that most of them start with a dollar sign.
I think most of them do. I mean, you know, and we've seen some pretty graphic allegations of this. You know, the last was in southeastern Kentucky, where a hospital has 300-plus lawsuits for stenting overuse, and there was a Department of Justice settlement, and the doctor's now sitting or going to a jail, according to the Department of Justice report. So, yes, there are some of it dollar signs. There's also the people have been now trained in eastern Kentucky to want this. And especially like antibiotics, and maybe we get Ms. Gibson to talk about that, because, you know, over decades and decades of being prescribed pills, pretty soon you think if, you know, it's like a Pavlov's dog, it's a reflex, something's wrong with me, I need a pill.
That's right, Kevin. This is Rosemary. I'll just jump in here.
Yes,
I call
do.
It the marinated mind. Our minds have been marinated to believe that more care is better care. We've been so trained, and even a lot of physicians, their minds have been marinated to believe it. Think of all the advertisements. They have the sales reps constantly coming in. And plus, as you say, Scott, the financial incentives are so profound. Bloomberg News just reported on a big teaching hospital in New York City. They had a financial turnaround. They got out of a financial hole by just jumping up the number of stents that they were performing. And the surgeon who led that effort was rewarded with a $4.8 million salary in 2012. So this is about, in many cases, big money. Not always, but a lot of cases, just about big money.
Now, you mentioned advertising, and I was going to bring that up, although, you know, in the media, that's kind of biting the hand that feeds us, so to speak. But I wonder how much of, you know, of an influence, or I see how much of an influence advertising has. Obviously, it does. Otherwise, the pharmaceutical companies wouldn't be spending those big dollars for 2, 3, and 4-page ads, most of which is fine print for medications.
Oh, you're so right. The advertising, it's all over, and it's consistent. And after, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20 years of this, we don't even see it anymore. And if you listen to some of the ads very carefully, where they're now required to talk about the risks of whether it's a new drug or something, they'll even acknowledge, you know, this drug can kill you.
Yeah.
And yet we don't even hear it. And we just go in and ask your doctor. And so people compliantly go in and ask their doctor. And we've lost our sense of, you know, let's put our thinking cap back on here. In some cases, you know, there's a lot of underuse. People don't get the care they need. But then we have this other phenomenon of people getting too much care. So we've got to put our thinking cap on, and I think that's the purpose of this show this morning.
Yeah, I think
we ought to turn our brains back on.
Yeah, and one of the things that really illustrates this with Kentucky, I think, are antibiotic overusage. When we started this show, we had this little graph, and we still have it. It was TV, we'd show it, but we can't. And it shows all the states of the United States, and Kentucky was number two. And so I thought to myself, well, let's see if this has been updated. And, well, sure enough, we've taken over the number one slot on antibiotic overusage. And there are, compared to some, compared to some states, we have double the antibiotic use.
Wow.
So it is a huge problem. And antibiotic overusage has multiple aspects to it. There's one is they're becoming ineffective because the bugs are becoming resistant. But the other aspect of it is that if you take an antibiotic just to be sure, because you want to make sure you get the best treatment for the infection, antibiotics can actually cause an infection, and that's called C. difficile. The CDC has had several reports out this week on that, that if you take an antibiotic and you're a child, you can get C. difficile, which is can be a life-threatening diarrhea and GI infection, and the same can happen with adults. So that's one of the reasons why the CDC wishes to cut back, because they've pointed out that a 30% decrease in the usage of some types of antibiotics can decrease the occurrence of C. difficile by 26%. So it's a huge problem, especially with antibiotics, because it not only affects you, but it can affect other people through bacterial resistance, and it could even conceivably cause infection. So you only want to take these when they're needed.
And this goes back, I think, Rosemary, to what you were talking about turning our brains on. I think antibiotics especially is something that we have all grown up with. The first medicines I remember taking were some form of penicillin, and on up through, "Doc, I got a cold, can you give me a Z-Pak?"
You're absolutely right, Scott. And when we go into the doctor's office and we've got a cold or whatever, by the way, there are 90 million office visits to doctors every year just for sore throats. And only 10% of them really are strep, where people need something. But when you're sick, you're not feeling well, we've gotten into the habit of asking for a pill, and often, too often, unfortunately, getting one that won't do us any good. And here's the reason, another reason, in addition to what Kevin said about why it's not a good thing. If you get an antibiotic for an ordinary cold, it's not going to work. But the next time that you need one and you get one, it may be less effective. That's the reason you don't want to get an antibiotic, because when you really need it, it may not work.
Now, when Kevin talked about it, he was talking about the germs that are making us sick developing a resistance to it. You're almost making it sound, Rosemary, like our bodies are also developing a resistance to the antibiotic. Is that, am I hearing you right, or am I misinterpreting?
Well, I'll let Kevin explain that in greater detail. But the reality is, when we go to the doctor, we should get the pill, get the medicine we need, not the medicine we don't. And what happens is, and even good doctors, when they don't want to prescribe an antibiotic because it's not necessary, patients may say, "All right, well, I'm just going to go down the street and get it from someone else." Mm. And that's why we have this snowball effect, and why places like Kentucky, West Virginia, a lot of other places, we have very high rates of antibiotic overuse.
Yeah, well, certainly, it could be a combination of both. You not only have bacterial resistance, but people can develop, for example, an allergy to antibiotics, such as a penicillin, sulfa drugs. You can get a sensitization to the sun. So you can develop adverse reactions to these antibiotics where you yourself can no longer take them, and also the bacteria can become resistant to them. I mean, it's the old phrase that I still remember in Jurassic Park. It says nature adapts. Things change, and this is a foreign substance, and both the bacteria change and your body changes.
I just say, antibiotics we used to call them the miracle drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're popping them like candy, and they are ceasing to be able to be miracle drugs. And so we have to be on the hunt for the next one and the next one, and we're using up our arsenal. So there are bugs out there that are highly resistant to the drugs that we have. And even, public health officials and the CDC, they're very, very concerned that we're using up our arsenal. That's why we have to use it wisely.
We got to get to a break here, but you kind of alluded this earlier. Before we go, Rosemary, let me ask, what, if any, role that closet full of samples that the doctor hands us a bag full of to try and see what they do, what role that may play in all of this?
Well, the question is, where do the samples come from? They come from drug reps who go out and give them to physician offices. and it's a perk. And so what's going on is not just the samples, but influencing the physician to prescribe a certain product. And it may be a product that the patient doesn't need, or it may be a brand name drug that's far more expensive and perhaps not even better than what else is already out there on the market. So this is the profound industry influence. It's not just on patients, but also on doctors to encourage them to overprescribe.
And we as patients like it because we don't have to mess with our insurance. We don't have to pay a copay. We got this little bag full of free meds that the doc handed us and said, here, this should help.
That's right. Now, for people who don't have the money, who don't have insurance for whatever reason, and they really need that drug, that can be a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, what's happening is people are getting too many drugs too often, and it's costing us and it's impacting our health.
We were talking about the overuse of antibiotics before the break, and we've got such a short segment now before we get to the news break. Kevin, where should we go next?
Well, I think we can continue this if someone calls in, or jump, Rosemary, if you want to talk a little bit about cardiac and heart stents. We touched upon that real briefly.
Yes, Kevin, thank you. There's a dramatic variation across the country in how many people are getting these cardiac stents to open up blockages in the arteries. And it turns out there are some communities around the country, including some in Kentucky, where there's dramatic overuse of stents. Just outside Washington, D.C., to give a clear example, there was a hospital that was found to have performed unnecessary stent procedures on 583 people. There was nothing wrong with them. It was a good moneymaker for the hospital, and the physician was in very strong contact with the manufacturer of the stent, the company. And he's subsequently, I believe, suspended his license or lost his license. So these pockets of overuse pop up. And we have to really be careful. I call it like the Bermuda Triangle. When you walk into a place, you want to make sure you get the care you need, not the care you don't. And if you have any question, if it's not an emergency situation, it might be good to get a second opinion from a different place.
With the cardiac stents, is there any health risk, any danger to having one of these when you don't especially need one?
Oh, goodness.
Anytime somebody's cutting into me, I think that's a risk, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they're putting in essentially a little coil wire within a very small vessel, and all sorts of things can happen. I mean, for one thing, you're on a protracted period of time. You're on anticoagulation or blood thinners. You can certainly have problems with that, anything mm-hmm. from GI bleeding to when you fall and hit your head, you can get bleeding inside your brain, which can be quite dangerous. And you have to have constant care after that. I mean, the allegations of the overusage in southeastern Kentucky, one of the gentlemen who apparently didn't have significant cardiac disease, just had procedure after procedure after procedure. I mean, these things can reclog, you have to be re-put in. And you're talking about someone dealing with an artery in your heart, where if things don't go correctly, the heart can have significant problems. Another problem, depending upon the type of blood thinner that you're on, but if you're on, for example, warfarin, and that's a very common mm-hmm. one that's used, it's the lesser expensive one than the high-dollar blood thinner, Plavix. But if you're on warfarin, a lot of vegetables you can't eat. So you're actually on an anti-healthy diet. You know, you're on a diet that promotes heart disease because you're on the warfarin, which is why, you'll maybe get prescribed a different type of anticoagulation.
Ironically, we were talking about that earlier this morning on the show because one of our information sheets just has little random facts every day. And one of those random facts is that you can OD on Brussels sprouts. If you're on the right kind of blood thinner that you can overdo, I think it was vitamin K they were talking about.
That's what happens is that you can't have a lot of, vitamin K. And so it is absolutely a very big decision to have a heart stent. And I certainly would get a second opinion, especially if it's an elective surgery, because if it's an elective heart stent, you don't have symptoms. Some reports show that up to 40% maybe, are done unnecessarily. So you have to be very careful.
All right. Mary, good morning. You're on Newstalk 590 WVLK.
Good morning. I think what you all are saying about overuse medicines are really good, but like I was just listening to the thing about the stents in the arteries and so forth, and for people that absolutely need them, you just scared them to death and made them think that that was a terrible thing to have done to them.
Well, we certainly don't want to scare people to death. As I said, if you have symptoms, you need them. If you're having an elective cardiac catheterization, I think that you'd need to get a second opinion. I certainly would. And I, you know, personally, if someone came up to me and said, you need to have a stent placed, I would be scared. Even if I needed it, I knew I needed it, and it was given appropriately. That to me is a very scary operation, and you need to get a stent. It's like when I had surgery, or not a stent, a second opinion. I mean, it's like when I had surgery on my neck. I think that people, need to be cautious. I wouldn't say scared, but cautious on advice that they're being given, and get second opinions.
I agree with that. For example, now I have my very close friend that had symptoms, definitely. I mean, he knew something was wrong. He's a runner, and he just couldn't run, and he knew it, and he knew right when it happened. And with a combination of his family doctor, who he totally trusts, and cardiologist, and the various tests that they gave him, barium stress test and all that, he had 3 stents put in, and he doesn't have the symptoms anymore, and he's doing great. So
yeah, and the majority of these work. 70% are put in because they are needed emergently. They are life-saving. It is the other category that you have some significant problems. And unfortunately, we've had at least the allegations in southeastern Kentucky, one of the bad examples. If you look at where the big areas for putting in these stents, we're in a region in southeastern Kentucky that is a huge hotbed. And, of course, you always hear, well, it's because we eat Kentucky Fried Chicken, et cetera, et cetera. And that is part of it. But the other part is that sometimes these are put in when maybe a safer and more effective treatment for that patient is available. And that's why it is always important to get a second opinion.
And I'm not disagreeing.
I think without a doubt.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying maybe you could have been a little easier, you know, talking about when it is needed, that it's a good thing and it's not so awfully, awfully dangerous like you're saying. Maybe it is awfully
awesome. Well, it is. I mean, I don't think you need someone puts a wire in the middle of your heart vessel. That is dangerous. There's no way around it. I mean,
I think it's
a huge surgery. The only minor surgery is surgery done on someone else.
that's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Anything could go wrong. And when you talk about something as complex as a cardiac catheterization, you want to make sure that you're at a competent facility, in competent hands, and if you can, if it's not emergent, I would certainly recommend getting a second opinion.
Yeah. But one thing I would recommend, this is Rosemary, is we don't want to frighten people, but we do want to enlighten.
Sure.
And one way to do that, if you go to treatmenttrap.org, there'll be a map posted this morning of the United States that will show you the variation across the country and big red hot spots where stents are overused. So the intent is to inform, not to frighten. It's scary when you're sick. It's scary when you don't feel right. And you want to go in and get medical care that, will help you. And there's a lot of good care that dedicated physicians and nurses do every day. At the same time, we have to trust but verify and just go in with our eyes open. Best wishes to your friend.
Yeah. Continue
good health.
I guess I just want to say that it is a really good thing for people that have a problem, and we don't want to keep them from having it if they really need it, because it's a really wonderful solution as far as used to be, open heart surgery and so forth, which is a whole lot worse. So anyway, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mary. Just to reiterate what's already been said here.
Let's talk about for a couple of minutes before the break here, and maybe we can continue it after the break. But let's talk about another thing besides antibiotics that, at least for me, I've been used to having my whole life, and that's imaging. Had my first dental work done when I was 3 or 4, and I've been having X-rays done at least to my head my whole life.
Well, hi, this is Rosemary. Yes. I'll jump in here. You know, we have these great diagnostic tools called X-rays and CT scans, and they're just incredibly valuable ways of knowing what's going on in our bodies. One of the challenges, though, is that we've come to a point where it's so easy to do them that we end up doing them too often on people who don't need them. And we should bear in mind that while they have benefits, they also do emit radiation. And we want to get the imaging we need, but avoid it if we don't. I'll tell you a quick story. I was giving a talk to a group of legislators and on this topic, and a gentleman came up, and he was speaker of his state assembly, you know, state in the Northeast. And he said, well, you know, I go to my doctor every 3 months, and I get a chest X-ray every time. And I asked him, do you have any underlying medical condition? He said, no. I said, well, what do you think about that now that what you've heard? And he said, maybe I better go back to my doctor and ask if it's really necessary. And standing next to him was someone from another state legislature. And he said, well, I go to my dentist every year and I get dental X-rays. Should I be getting them? I said, that's a really great question. Do we really need to be getting these every year? Can we push it back to 18 months, maybe every 2 years? Because there are benefits, but there are also risks, and we want to limit the radiation exposure. I'll tell you a quick story. There's a children's hospital in the Midwest, and they have very, very dedicated physicians. They reduce the number of head CT scans on children from 1,500 a month to 400 a month.
Wow.
And they reduce the radiation dose by 300% on those tests that they did. How did they do that? They really worked hard to ask themselves, does this child really need this head CT scan? Is there another way that we can find out what's going on? And they did it so thoughtfully over a series of years. And this is part of an Image Gently program that children's hospitals have started because they recognize that, you know, exposure to radiation when you're a child has more pronounced effects than when you're an adult because your body's growing so rapidly. Mm-hmm. So that's just one example of the amount of excess that's out there that we can take out of the system.
This is another one, as I mentioned, like antibiotics, that we're all fairly familiar with, but I would assume there's probably not the consumer demand, well, doc, can you take an X-ray and check it and see, that there would be for the Z-Pak or whatever.
Well, you know, that's not really the case. There is a huge demand consumer-wise for CT scans.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people like them. I even think I saw a billboard in Kentucky advertising, you know, free orthodontic visit, we'll do a free, or not free orthodontic, but orthodontic visit, mm-hmm. and we'll throw in a free CT scan. And all of this is, you know, should be avoided. People that use a CT scan for localization, for example, a joint injection, many times that could be done by an ultrasound instead. Not only cheaper, but you don't get the radiation exposure. CT scanners provide a huge amount of radiation. And that is a huge problem, you know, compared to a chest X-ray. It's much, much more radiation. And so you want to avoid these if you don't have to have them. It's as simple as that, you know.
I've had one. And, apparently I've been blissfully ignorant about a lot of things over the years. I've had one CT scan. I thought it was fine because they didn't stick me in a cigar tube like they would if I was having an MRI.
MRIs, I think, personally, I think they're safer, but they are scarier.
Yeah. That's us. It's our last segment of Dr. Kevin Cavanaugh and Rosemary Gibson. Rosemary is the author of The Treatment Trap, among other books, A Consumer's Guide to Prevent Unnecessary Medical Treatment. Rosemary, is it treatmenttrap.com?
It's treatmenttrap.org.
.org.
Scott, we donate proceeds to patient groups because the public has the right to know what healthcare insiders know.
So we can.
And it's on Amazon, and it's all for a good cause. People need to know, and we hope it's a public service for everybody.
All right, excellent. Gene, good morning. You're on Newstalk 590 WVLK. Gene, are you still with us?
Oh, yes. Hello. I wanted to ask what you thought about this. When I was 62, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and all these meds were, I was put on medications right away. And for 2 years, I was terribly sick. And I found out that the VA hospital has done many clinical studies on using a plant-based diet, or if you would call it a low-fat vegan diet, for the reversal and control of type 2 diabetes. And I went on that, and I'm off all medicines. What do you think about that, putting people on all these strong diabetes medicines right away?
I'll jump in.
Sure.
I can't speak directly to your case, but thank you very much for calling and sharing your own wisdom. You know, Hippocrates said that let food be thy medicine.
Yes.
And food can be a medicine. And also, if we misuse food, it can cause our bodies harm. So we want to eat the right foods, and that food can actually help us. There have been studies that show that people with serious heart disease, with a dramatic change, for some people, for a dramatic change in diet, exercise, stress reduction with things like yoga, and talking with others in a similar situation, it can reverse heart disease. In fact, in the Treatment Trap book, I interviewed a couple gentlemen who were scheduled for heart bypass surgery, and one was told he might even need a heart transplant. And these were gentlemen, they were from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and when they'd have to go see the Steelers football game, they couldn't walk up the hill to go to the stadium because they'd be, you know, short of breath. And so they were so afraid of having, you know, surgery. That got their attention, and they had made dramatic changes in their lifestyle. And a couple years later, I talked to one of the gentlemen, and I called him. He had been up on the roof of his house putting a new roof on by himself. Now, that may not be for everybody, but I think it's a wonderful way to end this this session today, by talking about how we can take care of ourselves, eat the right foods, because that'll make us healthier.
Gene, thank you so much for the call. The other thing I want to get, and we've got maybe 30 seconds here for either one of you, Kevin or Rosemary, in all of this, I keep thinking, whatever happened to first do no harm?
That's out the window, because healthcare has become a business. Unfortunately, it's a big business, and there are a lot of dedicated physicians, nurses, pharmacists out there that want to do it right. But behind it is this very powerful force, because medicine is very lucrative, and in some communities it's jobs. But we shouldn't use that as a reason for doing things to people that could cause more harm than good.
Rosemary Gibson, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure. It's treatmenttrap.org. It's on Amazon, all for a good cause.
Rosemary Gibson, author of The Treatment Trap. Kevin Cavanaugh, you'll be back next month.
Sure will. Thank you.
All right.